today marks the anniversary of the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin. It's 30 years later. And to talk to us about his legacy, perhaps what could have been in the situation that the atmosphere within Israel that led to that awful event is retired Colonel Miri Eisen, former Israeli intelligence officer and national security expert. Miri, I know you have a lot on your plate today. Thank you for making time for us on Chai FM this afternoon.
Simon, always want to be with us. And today, November 4th, is really a quite unique day.
It absolutely is. I think each of us have that almost Kennedy moment where we know where we are when Rabin was shot. I think it was of that kind of significance. I want you to talk to us, in your opinion, what was his legacy?
Yitzhak Rabin was a man who changed over his years. And I think that for Israelis, somebody who dedicated his life to being both in the Israel Defense Forces, participating as a leader, as a commander in the 1948 war, in the 1956 war, he was the chief of staff in the 1967 war. He is that most famous photograph of Moshe Dayan and Yitzhak Rabin and Uzi Narkis, all three of them in uniform, entering in the reunification of the city of Jerusalem in June of 67. And you take that. And after he retired from active service, he went into politics. We have a lot of people like that in Israel. But he most definitely left, I would call it, just the symbol of how you can go from being the top fighter in the state of Israel to being the one who sees the main fight in diplomacy, in arriving at peace, and with the most difficult of enemies. And I think that that's his main legacy.
There was tremendous schisms within Israeli society at the time. I think back to awful posters of Yitzhak Rabin dressed as a Nazi SS officer. I mean, the extent that the conversation became heated and anti-Oslo was fever pitch, and you almost think there was no option other than it ending the way that it did. But had he lived, do you think he would have managed to have bring Oslo home?
Simon, if you had asked me that question before, I would have said that the one thing I can't do is to speculate that way. And the reason I can't do so is because I've lived here my entire life. Not only that, I was actually at the rally where he was killed.
Oh my goodness.
With my husband. We were in the backside. It was a very big rally. It was what I call in that sense, you know, a nice rally. There are nicer ones and not nice ones. And to me, it has to do with where did the state of Israel go afterwards, meaning we took a very big shift on two different things. One is looking domestically at ourselves. Who are we as Israelis? And in this case, what does Zionism mean for us? What does it mean in being one state, two states, ruling over others? These are very important questions that we're still asking 30 years later. So all I can say is that in his assassination, what we have to do is we have to look inward. And I would say that Israel in the last 30 years has changed. And I can't say that it would have changed otherwise if he had lived. It's changed. We are a country of 10 million people. Aside from the fact that we have 10 million different opinions about what should happen here, I think it's also about how we look at who we are as a society, as a country, as a nation here in the Middle East. And on that one, I look at his legacy. And I see the differences today. So I don't know that he would have been able to implement it today, but we've all changed.
I hear what you're saying. I hear loud and clear what you're saying. I'm thinking back to that almost a saying in Israel that it takes men of war to make peace and it takes men of peace to make war. And I'm wondering if it wasn't just that he was the perfect man for the time, and whether by killing him we haven't been propelled down a trajectory that none of us wanted to go down and been living with it actually for the last 30 years.
So think about the additional people who came after him. I mean, in that sense, Netanyahu, who was the prime minister, I mean, Shimon Peres was the interim at the time, but Netanyahu, we look at him in the last 13 years, because he's been prime minister almost consecutively since 2009, but he was prime minister from 1996 to 1999. And I think that when you look at prime ministers and you go forward, and if I take somebody who in his way is never considered to be similar to Yitzhak Rabin at all, And I talk about Ariel Sharon, who was most definitely somebody who was, a man of war. And then he became prime minister, and he was the defense minister in the first Lebanon War, which is not one that left something happy in Israeli society. And yet, and this is after Rabin was assassinated in time, Ariel Sharon also said different things than what he had said earlier on in life. So that idea that as a leader, you can be a leader in war, and you can be a leader who absolutely sees why, sadly, you have no choice but war. And you can also look around and say, both happily and unhappily, why you have to go down a different path. And I don't want to leave that as a legacy just of Yitzhak Rabin. I don't necessarily see that in... You know what? I'm even going to go into Netanyahu, because Netanyahu was talking about peace out of strength, and I can argue on what that means. But he's somebody who has been at the front heart of Israel's security for so many years. If he's talking in that terms, that means that we still have to look in that idea of a path. At the end, I'm not talking about peace, reconciliation, and loving each other. But when you arrive at a resolution, you arrive at it with your enemies, not with your friends. And I want us to continue in that path.
Going back to the assassination itself, were you shocked at the time that the assassin was a Jew?
Well, it was immediately said so, meaning when they first said that when he was shot, and he was at the rally itself, and as I said, I lived not too far from there, and my husband and I had walked back to our apartment, and then we saw on TV, from the beginning, it was an Israeli. And you know what, in that sense, I mean, I was barely born when Kennedy was shot, but that's certainly something when, you know, like that you grow up knowing about. Assassinations are not usually, you know, a faraway person who comes in and does that. It's not a question of being an inside job. I think that one of the reasons that the assassin could get so close is because he was an Israeli Jew who looked like all of the rest of us. And he was one of all of the rest of us, just with the most extreme, horrific idea that he went and implemented. So I hate to say in the words that I'm very unhappy about it, and it doesn't make it any easier today either, but I'm not shocked.
It says a lot about the political discourse within Israel and the extent to which people are polarized. We forget that it was as bad as it was then. We've just come through the Mapecha Mishpatit, the judicial reform. I mean, the tone of the discussion in Israel reaches levels which, I don't know, as somebody who was brought up in a Zionist household, I never thought we'd be having discussions at that kind of level of loathing between each other.
Oh my! So Simon, I'm smiling right now, you know, on a day which is for me a somber day, because I agree. I want to know what would have been if Rabin had continued, but I can't do that. And why am I smiling? Because as somebody who goes back on history, as somebody who goes and reads, and we keep reinventing the wheel, I go into 1947, and I can send you what Benjamin Netanyahu's father, Ben-Sion Netanyahu, wrote in September 1947 against the partition plan. So that we're not talking in that sense, and that was specific because it was a very big ad and article that he wrote at the time, because there were enormous differences of opinion in 1947 about the idea of partitioning British-mandated Palestine into Jewish state, Arab state. And there was people didn't talk to each other at the time. I want to remind you that in the 1948 war, you had an event where the IDF put into the sea a Jewish ship that
Al-Talena.
Had weapons on it, not for the IDF. And that was in 1948. And again, this isn't to make it happier or easier.
Yeah.
It's to remind us that we did not invent horrible political rhetoric, that Jews have known how to be horrible against Jews. And when it comes to Zionism, I remind you also that, you know, the Zionist entity is an entity. What happened both when the Uganda vote came up after Herzl died. And I breathe in and I go and look at where we are. Because every once in a while, we still have to remind ourselves where we are. Even 30 years after Yitzhak Rabin, okay, after he was assassinated, we're 10 million people strong. We've built ourselves here. the Abraham Accords, meaning in that sense he signed the peace treaty with Jordan, and we have also treaties with additional partners in the Middle East. I'm not talking about the rest of the world. We're after the worst possible 2 years we could ever have never imagined, and yet here we are, and we're looking forward. And I want to look at that as a legacy.
That's
and
a
not
beautiful
at
place.
Our extreme polarization that is there and that we need to address.
Marie, I'm going to let you go because I know you only had 10 minutes for us today. I just want to tell you one thing before we go. At 4:30 every single day, we play an unusual song that relates to something that we've just spoken about. If I tell you that we have just spoken about Yitzhak Rabin, what song do you guess we are going to be playing at 4:30?
Shir HaReut.
Kimat, Shir LaShalom. Same.
Shir HaShalom, Shir HaReut, which is just, it's the song that goes together. That's the song that we want to hear. And again, this isn't about kumbaya and everything is wonderful. It's about us being together, understanding the important things. And yes, we will go forward on a path, which is going to be a better one.
And that's where we leave it. Retired Colonel Miri Eisen, Todarabalach. That was fantastic. Thank you for that.